So, may we start?
1, 2, 3, 4! So may we start? It's time to start. My time to start.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Third Act Podcast, episode number 221. I'm your host, Christian Estabrook. With me, as always, is Jericho Serrano.
Christian, I really value when people use violence for me. It's actually one of my love languages.
I killed it. That's like maybe the line of the movie. That's absolutely incredible. Good pull. Listeners, we want to remind you, all of us here at the Third Act Podcast, we watch lots of films. We have lots of opinions on those films, and we're just pretentious enough to think that you care. And everyone, welcome to our fucking fight club.
Yeah.
Jericho, you ever been in a fight club?
I want you to hit me. As hard as you can.
As hard as you can. Hit me right in the satire bone.
Don't hit me in the ear.
we'll get into it in a minute, of course, but there was more Fight Club references in Bottoms than I was expecting. What if they just did like the same cast and did like a full Fight Club parody? I feel like that would have been pretty good too.
Yeah, there's... I was kind of... I mean, the biggest shock in the movie was the direct David Fincher line. So I was not expecting that. But I actually didn't know how much of the Fight Club we would get into. Mm-hmm. I knew from the trailer that was part of it. But yeah, I mean, you could say, I mean, we could debate whether or not this is actually better than Fight Club. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of aggro Gen Xers who would be very upset.
are you trying to get people typing away, getting some emails already? We're only 3 minutes in.
I want to get some angry letterboxed rants. I haven't gotten any of those yet.
Is Bottoms better than Fight Club? You know, Fight Club is a movie that I never disliked it or anything like that, but it is a movie that I've always liked that's maybe gone up and down the most over the years, because I saw it as a teenager. It was a formative experience. I feel like, you know, I don't know, I feel like most like millennials catching up with Fight Club, it's pretty mind-blowing at the time. I probably said it was my favorite movie of all time for a little bit, really really high on it, and then it's like, oh well, maybe this is a bit overrated or a little oversaturated on Fight Club, and then it's like, okay, maybe this is trending down. And rewatching it, it's like, okay, yeah, it's not the best movie of all time, but maybe I dinged it too much. I don't know. I feel like I've, over the years, I've gone like, is this good? Is it great? Is it a masterpiece? I've been all over the positive side of the spectrum on Fight Club.
Yeah, it's a movie of its time for sure. And if you look at that year, 1999, one movie that I have rewatched recently, last year or two, that I think is only that is also from 99. It's a great year. We'll get to that. But the other movie from that year that was kind of like a big deal that I think has gone up for me, like is actually appreciated, is Being John Malkovich.
Sure.
And if you think of those two movies, you think of Fight Club. I think Fight Club hasn't aged as well as Being John Malkovich. But they are both movies of their time, although I would say being John Malkovich plays better in 2023 than Fight Club does. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
Well, I mean, to to transition, my favorite read of Fight Club right now is it's like a repressed homoerotic story, and that's really all that's on the movie's mind. It's not a takedown of masculinity or capitalism or any of that stuff. It's just some guys who, you know, like to be topless and be around each other. And that feeds directly into what we're talking about, because we're going to do a pairing of films for an episode we're calling I Killed the Teen Movie. We're going to talk about a new release called Bottoms, and we're going to pair that with Jawbreaker, 1999's Jawbreaker, in the back half of the show. I'm excited, Jericho. And this is, I mean, I screwed up because I started talking about Fight Club. The point of this whole episode was to get rid of some of our angsty, masculine, brooding energy after our Oppenheimer Nixon episode and our Friedkin episode. But then I got us on the Fincher train right out the gate. Yeah. So maybe we're stumbling before we even get started. Immediately started talking about,
man, what's wrong?
Oh, God. Cancel me. Anything else, or should we dive into bottoms?
Bottoms up.
Bottoms up it is. Well said. So Bottoms, of course, is co-written and directed by Emma Seligman. It stars Rachel Sennett, Ayo Edebiri, Ruby Cruz, and Havana Rose Liu. The synopsis from IMDb says, two unpopular queer high school students start a fight club to have sex before graduation. That's the whole synopsis. Okay, sure. That does happen. Absolutely. Jericho, catch me up a little bit. Rachel Sennett and Emma Seligman, their previous film that they worked on together was Shiva Baby. Were you a fan of that one? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked Shiva Baby. I think that was 2019, maybe 2020. It's right in that.
It was 2020. I think it was a pandemic spot. Movie.
Yeah, I can't remember. It was like right on the edge of pandemic times, but I think it does capture sort of a pandemic vibe of anxiety. Because that's what I kind of take away most from that film is just this kind of like claustrophobic, tense, anxiety ridden, dark, cringe comedy. Yeah, I liked it. And I think Sennett, definitely, I know a lot of people talked about her performance in that, and she was phenomenal. But other than that, that's all I've seen. I know she's been in other things, but I haven't seen her in anything except for Shiva Baby and now Bottoms, and I guess the director here, it's only these two films, right?
Yes, she did a couple of shorts, including Shiva Baby short that she adapted into the feature length version, but yeah, just the two features so far. So were you, because of that, were you anticipating Bottoms? I know, you know, a raunchy teen comedy is probably not the first thing on your list that you're gonna, you know, check off, that you're gonna rush out to see. So was there anticipation for Bottoms for you because of Shiva Baby, or how were you feeling about this one?
Yeah, it's really just that. It's just the two of them back again together after Shiva Baby was exciting that they were doing something completely different, because I think and that movie was really well regarded in terms of critics. I don't think a lot of people saw it. It wasn't a mainstream movie, studio movie, right? This is right. Essentially a mainstream studio R-rated comedy. So this is like kind of a big step up. It's not exactly the Gerwig step of going from Lady Bird to Barbie, but there's a similar tract here in terms of Seligman's. Is that how you say your name?
I believe so. I'm not 100% sure.
Yes, there's a similar trajectory for her kind of getting a chance to do something a little bit bigger and tonally different. But I was looking forward to it just from the standpoint that it was them two teaming up again.
Absolutely. Yep, I agree with that completely. Loved Shiva Baby. Rewatched it last week in preparation for this episode. Also watched the short. I'm a big Seligman head. I'll be signed up for whatever they do going forward. And Rachel Sennett, maybe even more so, kind of burst onto the scene. I believe on this very podcast, I may have said Rachel Sennett was my performance of the year in 2020. Mm-hmm. I was really taken by that performance. I also liked her a lot in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but I know she's in it, so I was kind of curious.
Yeah, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies is also kind of a young person, kind of comedic, you know, mystery whodunit slasher type thing. It's a lot of big personalities, but Rachel Sennett kind of acts circles around everyone else in that movie. She really crushes it, and I think she's great in Bottom. So 3 for 3 for me with Sennett, and 2 for 2 on Seligman. Tipping my hand here on Bottoms as we get into it. So I was looking forward to it, and it lived up to that expectation. I agree. This is a mainstream studio comedy. This is an MGM picture. It opened in limited release, but then they pushed it fairly wide. It's not doing incredible at the box office. I don't think anyone's upset with how much money it's made so far, but I kind of wish this movie caught a little bit more fire because I think there's something special here. And it feels like something, even though it has some of the, you know, some of the structure behind it for a mainstream comedy. I also think this is weird and transgressive enough that it kind of feels like Seligman and company got away with one. It kind of feels like they snuck one through. I don't think even that, like, I'm trying to think of something else. I mean, I guess Booksmart was like another comedy kind of in this vein. This year there was that movie Joyride. But I don't think either of those movies had the weirdness that Bottoms has to it. Honestly, this movie, one of the big surprises for me getting into this is how much of a parody it is of other high school teen comedies. I knew it was going to be kind of playing with tropes to some degree, but we are very much operating not in any kind of normal reality in the world of Bottoms. There's right away, there's conversations, there's how people talk to each other, certain things that happen that just strain any kind of believability. You can't suspend your disbelief to kind of buy all the weird things that are happening in this world, including the principal calling the two untalented gays to come to his office as one early sign that things are amiss. I also think there's lots of world building elements that kind of put this, I don't know. I don't know if you had a read on when this is supposed to take place. I think the movie intentionally is kind of in no particular time. There's references to comedies from like the 80s and 90s. Most of it feels kind of early 2000s with a lot of references. There's a Razor flip phone at one point. There's an Avril Lavigne needle drop. So if I had to guess, I would say probably early 2000s is when this is set. But there's also, you know, dialogue that's very modern, like Slay Queen, things like that. Nobody would have said that in 2003. So I think Bottoms is intentionally kind of just not operating under any internal logic. It's a farce. It's a parody. So with that said, it reminds me of maybe another comedy that maybe snuck through the system, even though it was probably too weird for mainstream audiences. And this may be, you know, a bad comparison for some folks. This is maybe too high a comparison coming from me. One of my all-time favorites. This kind of gives me Wet Hot American Summer type vibes. Maybe Bottoms doesn't go quite that absurd, but it goes pretty far. It goes pretty absurd over the course of its 88-minute runtime, which was a huge surprise for me. So I tried to kind of settle into what the tone of this was, but I think this movie delivers a ton. And first and foremost, is the jokes. I think that it's a really talented young cast. They hit you with jokes like fast and heavy, one after another. You're getting punched in the face with these jokes over and over, like you're at a Fight Club, a very, very funny Fight Club. And
see what you did there. Don't talk about it.
Very subtle reference there. Yeah, I mean, but there's all sorts of great jokes. There's multiple I could call out over the course of this review, things like that. And the energy and chemistry of the characters is all great. Rachel Sennett, as we've kind of talked about already, continues to just be like white hot, like burst on the scene. Seems like she can do no wrong. I also really like Ayo Edebiri. I'm less familiar with her work. I think she's mostly done voice acting performances. I think she also had a podcast, so big ups going from podcast to being co-lead of a major movie. I really like her from The Bear. I don't know if you've watched The Bear, Jericho.
No, I was just going to say that. No, I haven't, but I've heard all about it, but I think that's what most people know her from, because I haven't seen her in anything, I don't think. Although she is in like one or two episodes of Abbott Elementary, and which is like a kind of it's a pretty fun little, I don't know if you've seen that, it's kind of a sitcom, but she pops up in that and is really good, but I think that's the only thing I've seen her in.
They have great chemistry, and it's not a full, like, you know, straight man and, like the more wild card type characters, but it's largely like that. Rachel Sennett goes bigger in a lot of her scenes, and Etta Beery underplays a lot, but they both have incredible comedic timing. There's a lot of well-written jokes, but there's a lot in Bottoms that I think really only works because of how the lines are delivered, the timing and the tone that they, you know, the mustard that they put on it. I think both of them absolutely crush. I think this may sound like not a compliment, but I mean it as a compliment. One of the things I love about Bottoms is I don't think it's saying a lot. That's not to say that I think it's saying nothing, but I feel like the energy of this movie is just, let's be like kind of dumb and gross and funny, and we're going to, you know, give you a good time for 90 minutes. Some of the content of the movie even kind of calls some of that out, the way the characters use feminism in general or different types of buzzwords for purely selfish means. It seems to be kind of calling out there's this, I don't know, social pressure or expectation to say something or be a part of a cause or a voice. And the characters in this movie just kind of use, you know, abuse those ideas and hurt people along the way. And even though there's, you know, your typical conflict in the, you know, second act of the movie in order for us to kind of get back together at the end, this wasn't, I don't know, a heartwarming tale where I learned something at the end of the day. This was, I don't know, it was bloody and punches and lots of jokes. Some of them pretty blue, I gotta say, but it also doesn't feel like it's edgelordy, like it's trying too hard to be like offensive or crude or anything like that. I think it finds a really great sweet spot. So, I mean, I think pretty much down the list, there's things to pull out that are pretty great. Obviously want to give the most shine to the two leads here. But Jericho, I got to say, talk about exciting screen debuts. I think Marshawn Lynch holds the camera incredibly well and also has great line deliveries for his character. The director, Emma Seligman, they said that they cut so much footage because Marshawn Lynch would just ad-lib lines over and over and over again, and it was some of the funniest stuff that they shot for the whole thing, but they just couldn't use all of it. So he, I think, is a really natural screen presence. I don't know if he has what kind of range Marshawn Lynch has, but working with someone like Seligman, pretty great. I'm pretty excited for that. So a raunchy queer comedy that doesn't pull its punches, wink, wink, and is even bold enough to give us mid or during credits blooper reels, Jericho, we're back, baby. Cinema is back. We're here. I couldn't be happier. Bottoms was an instant classic for me. My wife and I saw this on a date night. There was not a lot of people at the theater, which I found vaguely homophobic. But Jericho, here's the buzz on the street. Okay. Actually, I think I put this in my letterbox for you. So if you read that, you're spoiled already. But we were walking in and there was these two younger folks one of them was on the phone. They're like, oh, yeah. Oh, my God. It's so funny. It was so great. I just want to let you know we got out, but we're going to go back and watch it again. So I'll talk to you later. And then her and her friend walked right back inside, bought two more tickets, and sat in the same theater that we did. So we were with a pair of friends who watched Bottoms, loved it so much, they bought two more tickets and watched it immediately again. So that's quite the endorsement. You don't see that type of thing too often.
Have you ever done that? I feel like I've heard mysterious rumors of things like that occurring, but I've never done that, and I've never witnessed that.
No, never for theatrical. I think the closest was probably the weekend of The Dark Knight. I think I saw the midnight screening and may have seen it the next day again, but never back to back. I'm just staying at the theater to watch the same movie twice. Mm-hmm. I've never done that. But maybe I should have done it for Bottoms because it was really damn funny. And I can't even remember all the jokes that made me laugh. It's going to be something I'll have to revisit multiple times. So I'm a pretty big fan of Bottoms. Jericho, what did you think?
His name was Robert Paulson. His name was Robert Paulson.
Can you join our adventure club?
I'm surprised there was no "his name is Robert Paulson" jokes. That could have edged this one into all-time cult movie classic. So, I mean, we're dancing to the same tune here, Christian, for the most part. And I'm going to agree with you on kind of the difference between this film and Shiva Baby, which was a cringe comedy, but it was a cringe comedy built on realistic anxieties. There was a groundedness to the film, even though it had a real chaotic energy. And even Rachel Sennett's performance in that felt recognizable within this crazy situation. But Bottoms moves entirely away from any sense of reality into the realm of cult movie farce. It's got a very blistering pace to it. Jokes and one-liners are being tossed around seemingly at random. I know it's not random, but that's what it feels like when you're watching it. The tone is very deadpan and absurdist, but also goofy and really over the top. So there is no groundedness here. There's no authenticity in the traditional sense. And then you have Rachel Sennett, who's also not playing a real teenager. I mean, she's 27, and that's like part of the joke. And the friendship between her character, PJ, and Josie, played by Etta Berry, that's like the kind of thing we've seen before. Like, one's more shy and awkward, the other's loud and combative, but they're both essentially losers and not really nice people, which I kind of appreciate. I mean, there's a little bit of the Alana Glazer and Abby Jacobson duo chemistry from the TV series Broad City, with its lead actors like pushing the boundaries of bad taste, like lots of flailing comedically. But I'd say Bottoms pushes things further than TV was allowed to go. And there's also like a sweetness and heart to that friendship in Broad City that's not really here, maybe little hints of it. And this is something that I really dug about this movie. It doesn't really have that squishy center that a lot of these raunchy women-led friendship comedies have. I'm also thinking of something like Booksmart, which I did like, but there's a sentimentality and kind of like a heart to the friendship that kind of comes through the raunch, right? And in terms of high school satires, it's also not really a satirical vision. It's more of a bizarro reimagining of high school. And one thing that this reminded me of more than even something like Heathers, which I think is like the clear touchstone, but more than that, I was reminded of the 90s series Strangers with Candy with Amy Sedaris.
Oh, wow.
Which also was an out-of-time high school horny comedy, but obviously Bottoms goes full R rating. So lots of F-bombs, lots of actual bombs, violence, blood, and unadulterated horniness. Teen horniness is not a crime, Christian.
Hell yeah.
We needed that song from Southland Tales to be blasting like in the gym while they're fighting.
And
we know from Shiva Baby that Seligman and Sennett are a dream team, but the same, I think, can also be said of Sennett and Etta Berry, who are actually real life best friends, who actually had a shortly lived Comedy Central series called Io and Rachel Are Single, which I haven't seen, but there's three episodes. You can watch them online. I think they're like 5 minutes. So maybe like 15 minutes total, three episodes that came out in 2020. And I'm assuming a lot of there's similar things they're doing in this movie, they're doing in that. But their comedic timing is so good. Like, they play off each other effortlessly. Sennett is overconfident. She's angry. She's obnoxious, very in your face. Whereas Io is a bit clumsier, inarticulate, shy at times. But I will agree with you. I think the ensemble is great in this movie too. I like Ruby Cruz as the kind of the life force of the Fight Club, named Hazel. Maybe the only genuine person on screen. Hannah Rose Liv and Kaia Gerber are two popular girls whom PJ and Josie kind of are lusting after. You didn't mention him, but Nicholas Galitzine.
Yeah.
He plays a pretty great himbo. Jeff, the football star, who the entire school props up as some kind of sex object. And I'm going to agree with you on Marshawn Lynch, former NFL star. He's former, right? He's not in the league anymore.
Yeah, he retired a couple of years ago. Yeah.
Marshawn Lynch, he's got some of the movie's best deadpan lines. He's playing a really inappropriate teacher. Maybe the only teacher we see in the movie. I'm trying to...
Yeah, just him and the principal, yeah.
Yeah, so that's an interesting choice, too. As a pure comedy, for me, there's more hits than misses. Mileage is going to vary with this kind of humor. There's so many background gags, tossed-off insults, one-liners, moments of physical comedy. It's not all going to work just by design because it's a lot of throwing things at the wall, right? But I admired the go-for-broke energy of this film. It's propelling forward at such a speed that characterization, plot, and logical consistency kind of become irrelevant, and the tone just kind of lurches around. It's often hard to care about the characters, maybe in the way the film wants us to, but then I also question if Seligman wants us to care that much. Because I think it's sort of daring in its depiction of queer characters without that sweetness or empathy.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a few moments between Aya's love-struck nerd and the popular cheerleader who comes to feel empowered by the Fight Club. Some of those moments with them, kind of, there's some sweetness to that. But there's also something really great about the unabashed queerness of this movie and how unapologetic it is about depicting these characters as shallow and just wanting to get laid. I mean, for the most part, that's what they want to do. That's their goal, right? So it's like a Porky's movie or any kind of like raunchy male-led high school thing that you've seen before. You're just putting women in their place and making it really gay. So I think that is kind of a fun thing. So the tropes we've seen ad nauseum, but not really from this perspective. But I do think, and I do agree, that there's no definite time period, but I did clock some of the dialogue as being modern. And there's no smartphones, which I think is actually smart because it does away with the need to depict social media constantly. Like, not everyone's not on their phones, and people will be filming the Fight Club and all that on their phones. You just do away with that because you set it in this weird netherworld between somewhere between the late 90s and like the 2010s. Like, it could be anywhere in that. Well, maybe not the 2010s, but there is, I think someone has a cell phone at one point, but maybe one. I see one cell phone, but he's also like calling a number from the Yellow Pages. So
yeah, exactly. He's holding a phone book.
Yeah. So there's a lot of that. And the humor, it reminds me a lot of sketch comedy, basically doubling down on absurdist situations. There's like allusions to feminism and gender roles. And it's definitely not trying to make a social statement like Barbie. There's kind of this messaging of women sticking together, but it's sort of breaking that down. It's kind of making fun of feminism, but then propping it up at the same time. And so like in between all the bloody noses and the sight gags, there is an intentionality to the movie that it's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of having fun with a lot of these tropes and also a lot of the messaging that we're expecting to see in like a women-led queer movie. You're not getting exactly what you might expect. But I have to shout out to one of the best recurring bits is how all the football players are constantly wearing their uniforms.
Absolutely.
Throughout the movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, this may not be a really deep movie, but that's okay. It's a comedy. It's very funny. It's pretty hilarious for most of its running time. As a comedy, that's what you're here for. And then I think it also introduces a whole cast of young actors to the world. Yeah. That kind of provides them with opportunities to really do what they do, because for the most part, you know, a mainstream audience, especially going into this, this is the first time you're going to see a lot of these actors, right? And I think it's setting them up in a way to maybe hopefully propel them to do more in the future. I'm also a big fan of Bottoms. I thought it was really, really funny and also kind of refreshing, like you were saying, by not kind of being didactic and shoving a message down your throat while also tweaking some of the social stuff in a way that's playful and kind of like, I think it's like celebrating it, but also like kind of tearing down the idea of having to preach about it. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's lots of, if you like people being punched in the face or getting hit over the head, and if you find that kind of comedy funny, you'll laugh. And if you also find absurdist humor, like A Wet Hot American Summer, or even something like Pen 15, which I kind of was reminded of.
Yes, good call, yeah.
Stranger with Candy, I mentioned earlier. Like, if you're kind of in that wheelhouse of things that you like, I mean, I can't see how this would really miss. So, Seligman and Senate are definitely two for two here.
Yeah, on fire for sure. Yeah, we're on the same page here as far as what this movie is or isn't saying. And I do think that even though it might not be deep, as you said, the fact that it chooses not to be deep maybe makes it more profound than if it had attempted to go for deeper meaning, if that makes sense. I know that was maybe a circular sentence there, but I think that's what makes this movie special, because it is really a bold choice. For the most part, the last 10, 15 years, most of the movies like this really feel the need to connect it to something, have an emotional core or have some kind of message or have the characters learn something or go on this journey. Booksmart, Joyride from this year is a completely absurd comedy. It doesn't like break reality like Bottoms does. But then the third act of that movie is not even a comedy at all. It turns into a whole different thing. Or movies like, going back a ways now, Superbad or Knocked Up, like all these kind of movies, they're sold on, oh, we have to go out and be raunchy and do a bunch of these sex jokes or whatever. But then they're always about friendship or finding yourself or understanding. Mm-hmm. And like they all have these kind of like twinkly moments, yeah, or endings that are sometimes kind of work. And that's why people, you know, elevate those movies. And sometimes it feels a bit ham-fisted to have some kind of message in a movie when really everyone's there for the jokes. Bottoms feels like it just breezes past that idea and maybe even is aware enough of its intended audience that they're not holding anyone's hands of being like, hey, audience member, we don't actually think feminism is bad or a tool to get laid. Like, here's an actual female empowerment story to placate you or to make this to soften the landing of some of the harder jokes that we're doing. I don't know. It just seems like there's just no interest or time for that, which I really appreciate. And I don't know. All the references in this are something that was really fun as well. There is very clear references to Heathers, as you mentioned. But I'm a Cheerleader, which I watched for the first time also since last time we recorded. One of my favorite jokes is they go on a date to a restaurant called But I'm a Diner. I was the only one in the theater laughing at that one. But that that really got to me just seeing the name of the place that they went to. But they also... something about comparing this to the movies that not the direct references, but the style of movie that this is in the vein of. You mentioned Porky's. I don't really know. I don't think I've ever seen Porky's. I'm aware of it.
Me either. It's just one of those things.
It is a reference point, sure. But I'm thinking about something like American Pie, right? Like, you know, guy friends making a pact to lose their virginity before they graduate. That's kind of a similar setup that we have here. And even though I don't think that Bottoms is too preoccupied with commenting on the genre or having a clear message. There is something about the construction of it that makes it go down a bit easier. Granted, there is the novelty of we don't get as many movies like this as we have had in the past focused on male characters or straight characters or both. Granted, so there's that factor in and of itself. But I feel like watching Bottoms, our two leads, I think they always know that they're being shitty. I don't think that they're deluding themselves into thinking, oh, we're the heroes or we're the good guys, because we're doing this and we deserve to get laid or whatever. Like, I feel like there's self-awareness pretty early on that what they're doing is kind of manipulative and shitty, but they're choosing to do it anyway. Whereas you watch something like American Pie, and even if the audience is meant to laugh at them, I feel like a lot of those movies portray the characters as if they think they're the heroes of their stories. The characters themselves don't see the faults in what they do or how they treat people or things like that, which I think can lead to it being a bit more unsavory at times. Whereas Bottoms, I think, is more honest about, like you said, these are kind of shitty people. These are kind of losers to a degree, and they're not really hiding that. And you can still have a lot of fun with them, even though they're not role models, as it were.
Yeah, I totally agree. And not to get too far afield on this point, but I think the worst recent offender is that movie No Hard Feelings, which came out this year. Jennifer Lawrence, which is basically, it's like a raunchy R-rated comedy. We're going to subvert the cliches of the rom-com. And then, in the third act, what do? We give in to sentimentality and it becomes a Hallmark card. You know, That's one of those things. Yeah, it's like if you're going to have a really creepy, almost borderline misogynistic sort of premise, you got to go for it. You got to, stick with your convictions. And so that's one that, despite the Jennifer Lawrence and the other actor are game to do whatever, it's a kind of a disappointment that the screenwriters have to feel like they got to do that. And I think, Bottoms really isn't going for much emotional impact at all. There's a couple little moments here and there. It's just a comedy, I think, and it's trying to make you laugh. And I think it does that. So if you're going to do a comedy and you're going to be gross and you're going to be bloody and you're going to be inappropriate, whatever, then make your characters someone unlikable. Lean into it, and I think that's
okay.
And it's if it's funny, you're going to go with it. You know, if it's painfully unfunny, then that's where I guess it's subjective, right? But I think there's enough comedic variety in this for most people. Although I will say, if you are wanting something with a little more characterization, a little more plot, a little more to latch onto, it could be hard for some. Like it's very much swinging and doing things, and it's a farce, and it's not a parody. It's not a spoof. You said parody, but it's not like a spoof movie. But it's has parody elements and is very unconcerned with kind of telling a linear story, and I don't know, making you fall in love with the characters. But I mean, I kind of love the characters because they just are sort of raging at the world and they're just horny teenagers and it's funny, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's a bunch of misfits. Yeah. What's not to love? And yes, the comedy is subjective. I actually heard a couple of negative reviews that were like, what's so funny about people getting punched in the face? I'm like, friend, I don't know what to tell you. It's just funny. I don't know. You go back through comedy history and people getting hurt is funny. Buster Keaton, right? You know, this is not the exact same type of jokes, but watching people get hurt is funny. I don't know. I mean, I guess, difference of opinions can be out there. But for my money, it's hard to see some of these Fight Club scenes, especially some of the surprising ones when people get hurt in much more extreme ways than you're initially expecting, or the climax that really just pushes all the chips in. That's good. It's funny. What you're saying about like plot and characters, the only I don't want to take this movie down a peg at all, but the only thing that is in the range of criticism for me is I do appreciate that this movie is sub 90 minutes. That's great. We're getting in, we're getting out. We don't have the, you know, the Apatow bloat or anything like that with this raunchy comedy. Great. I'm in. But it does seem like there was maybe a lot of versions of this movie and a lot that was cut out, because there's like characters that are introduced that we have no idea who they are. There's plot stuff that where I'm like, huh, how did we get here? It feels like we really, you know, fast forwarded something.
For example, the most glaring example is there's like one character that's in all the Fight Club scenes who doesn't have one single line.
Right.
She's just there.
Well, there's a couple. There's her. There's maybe this is intended. I don't know. But there's this Fight Club between the Hazel character and this big like monster football player who they keep in a cage. And he's in like the background of some shots, but there's never any attention called to him. And I was like, I bet there's a scene where they actually set up what the fuck this guy's deal is. For me, maybe the most galling is they Ayo Adebiri's character, Josie, goes to see this like wise old sage in like a mobile home, and they have this conversation, and it seems like they're talking about this character as if there's been any interaction or setup to them, but there's not. It's literally just that one scene. So it's like, boy, I bet that there was other versions of this story where we got a little bit more to it. So I'm also curious to see how it plays on rewatch, knowing that for my money, the plot's a little fragmented, or it kind of jumps around at times. But honestly, making those tough decisions and maybe having the movie be a little bit, you know, wonky or jumpy at times, but giving it a peppy almost 90 minutes, that's probably the right choice. So I'm not trying to take anything away from Seligman. I think it was great. But if you are expecting something that's a bit more straightforward, I agree. Maybe it's not one that everyone will be able to wrap their arms around, but we definitely were. Big, big hit. One of the best of the year, I think. That's Bottoms. But let's go back to the year 1999 and talk about a film written and directed by Darren Stein called Jawbreaker. This one stars Rose McGowan, Rebecca Gayhart, and Julie Benz. The synopsis: three of the most popular girls at Reagan High accidentally kill the prom queen with a jawbreaker when a kidnapping goes horribly wrong. So Jericho, this is, calls up a lot of things, I think, that we've touched on occasionally here on the podcast. This is a big don't judge a film by its cover entry for me, because I watched this for the first time in prep for this episode. But I was always aware of Jawbreaker, of course. Yeah, I've seen this movie box, seen that poster thousands of times, and definitely know some of the movies that inspired it or it was inspiration for. So it feels like a movie that's definitely been out there, even though I never actually sat through it. And it's definitely in cult classic status now. And I think also in the queer canon, if you ask most people, Jawbreaker is in the ranks. It's kind of achieved a certain status in the previous 20 plus years. But at the time, it was a box office bomb and a critical bomb. I think this has like a 14% on Rotten Tomatoes. This feels like something that people just, for the most part, mainstream critical community, things like that, were just not ready for Jawbreaker at all. So, Jericho, I'm curious, catching up with it for the first time recently, is there more that Jawbreaker offers than a lot of folks thought back in 1989? What did you think?
Well, similar to you, I've recognized this cover art, this movie. I remember thinking like, I remember it not playing well or like being poorly received. I do remember that, but also I remember kind of like, there's something. It's really dark. It's really transgressive. People were just kind of grossed out by it, right? Watching it now, I kind of don't think that's the case. I mean, it's not really, but I think that there's a definite link in the pairing today, because Jawbreaker and Bottoms are essentially both dealing with the theme of high school popularity, but in very different ways. And I guess that, I mean, that's the case for most high school comedies, but I think Jawbreaker feels really like a natural link between Heathers and then something like Mean Girls, which then makes it a precursor to what Bottoms is naturally up to. There's the campy cult vibe, but also the film has been reclaimed, like you said, by many in the LGBTQ plus community since its release in 1999. And that's something that Bottoms is more obviously courting, as well as the mainstream audience, but they're going to get that audience, the queer audience, in droves. So the cast for Jawbreaker is interesting. You have a lot of people coming off hit properties. Let's see. Rose McGowan was in Scream.
Mm-hmm.
Rebecca Gayhart was in Urban Legends.
Yep.
Julia Benz was on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I guess the newbie here would be a baby-faced Judy Greer as the ugly duckling character, Fern Mayo, which is a Hall of Fame name, I think.
11 out of 10. Just, like, couldn't be more perfect. Fern put it in the Mayo, Smithsonian. Fern just, Mayo, incredible. Yeah.
So that gets a half-star bump already, just for the name. And, of course, this character predictably gets a makeover, joins the popular crew, if only as a bribe, since she's the only one, like, only witness to the clique's murder of their fellow classmate. Nay, also a funny name, Liz Purr, with two R's, who's played by Charlotte Anya, and she's only in a couple scenes. I think out of the cast, McGowan is having a lot of fun, having a ball as the sociopathic queen bee, but I think it's Greer that has the most to do, most challenging part, really gets to play the comedy and the horror of the situation. Gayhart is pretty mediocre as the one in the group that has a change of heart. She doesn't really get the snappy one-liners like McGowan and even Benz, Julie Benz to some extent, although Benz mostly spends the film crying or hyperventilating. And I think the Gayhart is in the worst scenes, opposite a thrift store Ethan Hawke love interest. It's pretty bad. And then Christian, you might have picked up on this. Horror fans will probably recognize PJ Souls and William Catt from Carrie. They're playing the dead girl's parents. And then you have Carol Kane from When a Stranger Calls. As a well-meaning teacher. But Christian, don't ask me what the hell Pam Grier is up to. As a hard-nosed detective, I don't really get what she's on about here. And my take on this movie is that it's not bad. I kind of liked watching it. Not really from like a plot or character standpoint. I think the film's biggest selling point are the costumes and then, to a lesser degree, some of the dialogue. Each character has a very distinct wardrobe. The costumes feel very modern, very like fashionable for that time, at least, without ever looking like outfits high schoolers would ever wear in reality. I mean, let's be honest. Most of these types of movies have actors in their 30s playing teens, and I don't think the age gap isn't that stark here. I think all these actors here were in their they're in their 20s at least. It is noticeable, I think, which makes everything seem more deliberate. And I think this is something that Seligman does in a very upfront way in Bottoms as well. And I like the aesthetic of this movie. It feels very like a mix of 50s and 80s, very pastel, candy colored, which makes sense given the countless montages we see of the Jawbreaker candies being mass produced. And the script, which is also written by the director, Darren Stein, has some great lines in it. I mean, there's some good dialogue here, some funny stuff, especially when delivered in full deadpan by McGowan. One is that I liked is, "Now get in there and strut your shit. Like everything is peachy fucking keen." It's a good line. So the dialogue and the wardrobe, that combination kind of lifts this thing into the realm of high camp. But I think unlike Bottoms, the pacing and tone is more of a problem in this movie for me, especially by the third act. Hey, that's the name of our show. So like, because after Rebecca Gayheart's character, she kind of turns into this like do-gooder all of a sudden. She hooks up with this Zach guy, who's the one that's channeling Ethan Hawke without the charisma. The pace kind of slows down and things are kind of a drag when we have to like get into that stuff. And also the rape subplot feels like a wannabe shock development that's not really commented upon in any interesting or provocative way. And it doesn't make a lot of logical sense, if logic even matters in this movie. Plus, that whole subplot is further given an ick factor by the presence of Marilyn Manson, who's playing the stranger and would-be rapist, something that feels even creepier, obviously more problematic right now.
Yeah.
But if Manson gets a full star debump, the scene where McGowan makes her airhead jock boyfriend fillet a popsicle kind of evens it out. It takes away the Manson, which I suspect that sequence alone gives it sort of like the queer canon bona fides, right?
Sure.
Plus, you got opening credits with Veruca Salt's Volcano Girls blasting. I liked a lot of the 90s music. So that's pretty fun. It's a movie that's probably not very good, but in terms of 90s high school comedies, I mean, this was released the same year as Can't Hardly Wait. Do you remember that one? So,
of course,
it's at least novel for embracing camp, some queer overtones, and then darker themes. Though, of course, I guess you could argue Heathers already did that a decade earlier. So I thought Jawbreaker was kind of fun, a watchable time capsule that's aged better than, I think it's aged better than most 90s comedies of this type, but I'm not all out willing to embrace it as a cult classic.
I think this movie has a lot to offer. I think, we had lots of choices actually for bottoms. We chose a pairing film before we had seen Bottoms, and neither of us had seen Jawbreaker either, so we just thought that they would mix well together. I think they really do. I think there's a lot that compares nicely between the two films, and I think that we would have had other options that we could have gone with. There's a lot that we've mentioned already. We'll mention a few more, but I think the overall kind of tone to Jawbreaker is one of the things that pairs really nicely with Bottoms overall, because it is a bit darker and hard edge. It's not this scandalous thing that, you know, pull it from theaters. How could our children ever watch this? It's not dangerous in any way, except for maybe the presence of Marilyn Manson, which is a bit rough through modern eyes, for sure. But I don't know. And Jawbreaker does kind of have a morality to it. You know, there is a good triumphs evil by the end to a degree, but it doesn't feel like it's making like broad proclamations or this movie's about characters learning their lessons or getting their comeuppance. Yes, there is that aspect to the plot, but I think the movie revels in kind of the dark edges of these characters. It's not portraying them in this way to really even villainize them, but kind of celebrate the darker aspects of them. And I think that has a lot to do with the entire package, right? You've talked a lot about the look, the aesthetic of this, the brightly colored costumes. Costumes probably are the number one thing to recommend in Jawbreaker overall, but how these characters are kind of framed and portrayed, it is kind of worshipful in a sense, even though they're deeply flawed, if not, you know, kind of evil to a certain degree. And the movie does, I don't know, it goes places. I think it maybe is a little bit harder edged than you kind of hinted at earlier, Jericho. For example, far be it from me to call for censorship on any level, but Jawbreaker did originally receive an NC-17 rating because of the sex scene between McGowan and Marilyn Manson. They cut it drastically in order to get an R rating. not a fan of censorship, but we're probably better off with the more truncated version of that scene being the one that lives on.
Yeah, no one wants to see that.
I think we're better off. I think that one worked out in our favor. But that's also a scene where someone picks up a random creep of a man to have sex with in order to set up a false rape on top, like literally on top of a dead body. So this movie is not, it doesn't have kid gloves on, right? Like it is willing to go there. It's not the most extreme, what have you, but it probably maybe had an outsized conversation at the time. I don't really recall, but I do think it has quite the edge to it at times, which honestly is what I liked most about this. I agree with you. I'm not really here for the overall kind of plot or how the story unfolds. Some of the characters here really work, but it is not as fully fleshed out from the entire cast as something like Bottoms is, I don't think. And it doesn't have quite the impact, but I do really like what I read as the intent here from, writer director Darren Stein, who is like, hey, let's just fill out the cast with people that I know and admired, in my formative years or whatever. Let's get Pam Grier, let's get Carol Kane, let's get PJ Souls, all these guys to come in and do something a little fun, or kind of fill out the cast with people that they appreciate. Maybe that's not the case. That's what it feels like to me. It feels like building this out. And honestly, this movie was so poorly received initially that Darren Stein didn't end up having much of a career. I think there's one other feature film that he's directed, but it doesn't look like that got a huge following. So I don't know. I feel like the reception to this is kind of a disappointment because Jawbreaker offers a lot. I would have liked to see more from this creator of what else he could have cooked up, because this movie's very influential. I don't know how familiar you are with it, Jericho. I'm a couple years younger than you, but Mean Girls is a movie that hit at the right time for me. I think that came out when I was 17, right around the end of high school. So I really liked that film when it came out. I've watched it, many times since. Pretty big fan of it. I look at that movie. I have not rewatched in the last week since I watched Jawbreaker, but everything's subjective, right? And we bring where we're at that point and what our experiences are and what we have and haven't seen to it. I think it's Mean Girls is going to take a massive hit next time I watch it after seeing Jawbreaker, because there is so much of Jawbreaker in Mean Girls. Mean Girls is basically a softened, like watered down version of Jawbreaker.
Yeah, like it's like a Disney Channel version of it.
Absolutely. It and thinking about Mean Girls, and there's scenes, there's like brief kind of flashes of like fantasy elements in Mean Girls where they imagine like fights or death scenes and things like that that don't end up really happening in the reality of that movie. And so it really feels like Mean Girls is a Jawbreaker, maybe to slightly lesser degree Heathers, but just pulling all its punches, just being more soft and candy coated, which, I mean, I guess there's a place for multiple things, but I don't know. In my mind, stacking those against each other, I'm like, yeah, I want the bolder one. I want the one that takes more risks, that goes out on a limb more. Maybe with that more polish of a more kind of successful mainstream movie, there's some things that are, fine-tuned to a point. You don't have, some like awkward, smaller characters, things like that. Maybe those things kind of even out in the more straight ahead movie. But I find Jawbreaker much more endearing after watching it for the first time, because it is willing to kind of go to those places. And again, it's very silly. I mean, the amount of this movie that wraps around a recording on a birthday card is quite silly. But I think the movie is, of course, aware of all its silliness and its campiness. I wondered how the transitions played for you, Jericho, where we like transition from scene to scene with like loud sound effect and a, you know, full screen wipe. I don't know. I didn't laugh at any of them, but it did, you know, really call attention to itself as this movie is not taking itself too seriously, even when it's at its most dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. It leans into the camp for sure. And I just kind of took some of those. Also, some of the stylistic flourishes and the needle draw, it just reminded me of the 90s. So it was kind of like 90s, early aughts filmmaking, you know, where it's like that's kind of something a lot of movies did, trying to be flashy. And I could have, I'm neither here nor there with a lot of that stuff, but it didn't really bother me.
I mean, it does feel like Darren Stein's, I don't know, maybe he had a crystal ball and knew he wouldn't get too many at-bats when it comes to making movies. So, yeah, let's get any, you know, a character actor or someone from some other property that I'm familiar with, put them in this movie. Yeah, let's do all the sound effects and transitions and screen wipes. Yeah, let's do all these Dutch angles. Like, I feel like the camera is never like level through like the first chunk of the movie. Everything's at these weird canted angles the whole time, but I don't know, the maximalism worked for me. I was in on it, and yeah, I mean, there's lines, you know, I mean, I Killed the Teen Dream is classic, where we stole the title for this episode from. I really like She's So Evil and She's Only in High School. That's kind of an instant classic for me. And yeah, I mean, I love Judy Greer when she pops up in random things. That's kind of what she's known for, is just randomly popping up. So seeing her early on in her career is great. And Rose McGowan, man, I know there's, you know, all sorts of there's a whole narrative to her and her interaction with being in Hollywood films and one of the most outspoken, and when the news broke with Harvey Weinstein and all that. But man, when she was on it, when she was given the opportunity to really kind of like dig into a character, she really fucking crushed it. Yeah, especially in the 90s.
She's perfect. This incredible perfect kind of deadpan delivery of these lines. I mean, you got to have somebody like that to deliver a lot of this dialogue. That's why I think some of the other actors around her, as besides Greer, maybe aren't as adept at that. So the tone kind of veers off whenever when she's not on screen. It's kind of like kind of a drag. But were you in on the Ethan Thrift or Ethan Hawke? I mean, did you like that stuff?
No, that guy that's a red flag right there. Yeah. Jericho, let me tell you, that actor's name. I don't know if this guy, what is on Wikipedia, he is the only name that is not hyperlinked, where you can't click on his page to see what else he was up to. That actor's name is Chad Christ. So I think that tells you all you need to know.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of things suspect there. Yeah, he had the haircut, you know, that Ethan Hawke hair, and like no brooding though, no charisma, just kind of a wet blanket.
Agreed completely. But yeah, no, it's worth catching up with for sure. I can see why a certain, you know, fraction of the audience found something to kind of champion and share and kind of build a little fan base around this, people to champion this movie decades later. I also get why it wasn't as widely accepted at the time, but it's worth going back to. I think, I don't know, Jericho, not to pat ourselves on the back, but yet again, we throw out an option. Hey, let's talk about these two movies, and they end up fitting really nicely together. I think Bottoms and Jawbreaker is a great double bill.
Yeah. And it's not as obvious as like Heathers or something, right? It's a little bit more cult, a little bit off the beaten path, I think. Although the people that love Jawbreaker will tell you otherwise. Sure. I think that this one definitely hit.
Jericho, I mean, real quick before we get out of here, I not on purpose, I mean, I watched Bottoms and Jawbreaker for the podcast, of course, but since we last recorded, I went on my own little like queer film festival. First time watches for me since we last recorded. I watched these two, Jawbreaker and Bottoms. I watched Heathers for the first time. I watched But I'm a Cheerleader for the first time. And I watched Basic Instinct for the first time.
A lot of iconic firsts here.
Yeah. a lot of iconic firsts, a lot of like all-time queer characters that I was unfamiliar with until the last 2 weeks. So it was quite a run, and I'm glad I watched some of those, because there's lots of references to some of those in these two movies that we talked about that I would have missed if I hadn't done that last minute homework, which I didn't even do as homework. I just happened to watch those movies around this time. But there's other options we could have chose to talk about. I don't know. Maybe we'll do an I Killed the Teen movie too, and talk about some more of these movies someday.
I mean, I'm open to it for sure.
Absolutely. So no idea where we're going next. Are we going back right back to the brooding? Are we going to have some more fun next episode? Hard to say, but we'll be around. And folks, if you want to share any thoughts that you have, any recommendations, anything like that, you can email the show at thethirdactpodcast@gmail.com or find us on the social media you like best. We post on Instagram the most, so give us a follow over there at the Third Act Podcast. Jericho, this has been great. Oh, I forgot to ask. I was going to say this at the top. Real quick, final thought, final word. How do you feel about Jawbreaker the candy? Have you even ever eaten one? It seems like kind of an impossible thing to even consume.
No, I think maybe I tried one when I was a kid or whatever, like, or when it came out, like when they first were a big thing. And it's not something I have any fondness for. And it sounds like a really, really horrible idea. And probably why it didn't last. I mean, they don't still produce those, do they? I mean,
Maybe as like a real niche thing, like mm-hmm. if you went to like a candy store that only had kind of unique candy options, you could probably get them there, but you can't get them at like a Target or a grocery store, I doubt. I don't think that's a thing, but I'm pretty sure I've never actually eaten one, and I'm not even sure what the process would be to eat one. It seems impossible. I understand why someone could choke and die on it.
Do you lick it until it gets small? Is it like one of those where you just keep licking it until it gets small enough to bite into, or you bite in right at the beginning? I mean, Pam Grier kind of demonstrated a little bit in the one interrogation scene. But it's we needed maybe a kind of— there are lots of shots of it being made, but no sure. real shots of it being consumed, aside from maybe some scenes where kids are kind of like chomping down. There's like a quick montage of a bunch of kids on like in the playground eating them, but I don't know. That's maybe the most baffling thing about Jawbreaker.
It seems movie. Impossible. I feel like you can't show someone eating a Jawbreaker, because can you even do it in one day? Like no. if you...
one single take, it'd be like art film. It's just one long static shot of someone eating
Bela Tarr. Yeah, someone eating a Jawbreaker.
It just goes for 14 hours uncut, you know. Just...
I mean, I'm glad Jawbreakers exist, because it is like a dark, scary sounding name for a candy, and the perfect title for this movie. So Jawbreakers did their service just in that vein alone. Anyway, let's get out of here. Remember, dear listener, that the greatest act of all is the third act of the rest of our lives. Make the best of it, and have a good night.